Music from Laura Story, Who But Jesus, the name of the song. 18 minutes after the hour, Dr. Don Clark joins us. Don is a biochemist and a vintner, or wait a minute, or is it, I get those two confused. Vintner or vigneron, which is correct, Don? Are they both right, maybe?
Oh, they can be both right. One, okay. The vigneron takes care of the vineyard, and the vintner takes care of the wine.
Okay, well, you do both then. Okay, all right. Don, also a member of the board of Creation Moments, and Don joins us just about every Tuesday morning. We talk about, evolution and creation and science and faith and such things. And this Don, today, this is a topic we've touched on many times over the past 4 or 5 years. But it's always worth bringing up again, and that's this notion of organic food, slow food, and it goes right to the heart of this culture where all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, I guess probably the past 50 years, corporate agriculture has been the thing. We're trying to feed the world here. We need greater harvests and more quantity, and apparently we're just discovering we've really, really sacrificed quality, have we not?
Oh, very much so, and a lot of it has to do with the chemicals that we put on our typical agricultural products, the general class of the chemicals used is called pesticides, but that general term could mean insecticide, that is an agent to kill insects, or fungicides, which obviously kills fungus. Herbicides, which kills growing things, which kills plants, mm-hmm. and rodenticides, obviously, which kills rodents. So, you know, we're trying to control our environment from all of these things that obviously can attack the things that we're growing. And the problem with that, of course, is that those chemicals wind up being incorporated into the foods we eat. Now, it's interesting that, you know, for an adult, it, you know, may not, some of these compounds and products may not be that dangerous, but for a growing fetus inside the womb of a mother, it can be devastating. As new studies have shown that, of course, with many, many other things, you know, smoking being one of them as well, that the growing fetus is very, very susceptible to any toxins that the mother may be taking in. And in this case, in her, you know, just the food that she's eating. Mm-hmm. A lot of these pesticides, for example, have been shown to have deleterious effects to the brain, causing ADHD, for example. We now know that, you know, some of these things are affecting, you know, we were wondering why are so many of our children showing up with attention deficit disorder, and lo and behold, it's some of it is caused by the pesticides that are being consumed by a pregnant mother through the foods that she's eating. And so, you know, how do we overcome this? And
how does science predict what's going to happen when a product is used in mass, you know, across cultures and with 30 years of exposure? How do they test for ill effects? How do they know it's really safe in the long term?
Well, that's the problem, because most of the testing for these type of products is done is acute testing. So you take your pesticide, for example, and you keep dosing maybe a rat or a mouse or a rabbit or, you know, other types of lab animals, and you see, okay, what's the concentration of this compound that will kill 50% of the animals that you're testing it on? LD50. Mm-hmm. And so you get a very gross estimate of its toxicity, you know, or its relative toxicity, but you don't necessarily get an idea of the long-term effects of these products, and especially you know, for a growing fetus, for example.
Yeah, and how so do you test it? How do you test it in combination with all the other things going on in life? I mean, what do you get in 30 years down the line is a combination of influences and chemical effects and vitamins. I remember back when, back in the 30s when science discovered, hey, you can fortify foods with iron. Let's do that. That sounds like a good thing. And then all of a sudden money got involved and various food manufacturers around the country started adding iron and advertising it. And of course, if you're going to advertise it, you got to create the need. So now they were telling us that we were suffering as a nation from iron deficiency anemia, tired blood, and Geritol came along and all these other products. And then by the 50s, 20 years later, they discover, hey, men are getting prostate cancer like crazy. And it's because there's too much iron in their systems. And we put it in milk, we put it in cereals, we put it in every food that came along because it made us competitive with the rest of the industry. So it's even economic factors that have to be figured in when you're deciding whether a product is good or harmful. Mm. I mean, you can oversell it.
Yes, very much so. Of course, pesticides aren't necessarily sold as, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, although some of it is sold because, herbicides, the major one that we've talked about on this program is, of course, glyphosate, the primary ingredient in Roundup.
That's Roundup, which you can buy it down at the hardware store.
You can spray it all around your house. Yeah, and we've been told that it's safe, it's no problem, you can, just distribute it all over the place and it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it is a problem because it has been now shown that not only is there major intestinal problems by ingesting, for example, wheat that contains glyphosate. And glyphosate is one of those things that, farmers are now spraying right before they harvest. So there's not this long interval between the time that you last spray and by the time you harvest. They are actually spraying it very, very close to harvest so that the grain is dry, for example. You have a uniform, everything dies, and so you've got a uniform dryness to your grain, and you get a higher price at the silo because mm-hmm. of the grain storage place because, okay, now you've got a better quality, in quote, product. But do you really, when you are selling a product that is contaminated with this supposed innocuous ingredient that sucks up all the heavy metals, for example, in your stomach and causes all kinds of problems. And now we know from other studies that it can even cause abortions of children for mothers, again, who consume, products that have this on it. So a lot of the soybeans and a lot of grains are treated this way, and that is being ingested by us. And that's just one ingredient.
Well, there's a compounding factor, too, that needs to be mentioned here, and we've talked about this in the past. Once you have Roundup destroying everything, it'll destroy corn, too, unless somehow that corn can resist it. And so we genetically modify that corn so it withstands being sprayed by Roundup. And everything else dies, so you're left with a nice field of freestanding corn and nothing in between. You can harvest it easily. But the genetic modification has some side effects too, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and it depends on how it's, of course, genetically modified. But in this case, it's genetically modified to resist, the corn being a broadleaf. A grass type of substance to resist the effects of Roundup, for example, like I said, but which chelates the metals. Now, the problem, even with that, even though it looks like you have a healthy corn plant, the Roundup is getting into the soil and still getting into the plant, and it's chelating the metals. So you wind up with a corn, the corn, the product in the end, that has 400 times less calcium in it. So nutritionally, it's it it's it it's of less value than if you had just grown it naturally and done the things that farmers used to do in growing products. One of the things with using all of these pesticides that was advertised that, hey, you know, if you use this stuff, and I'm not just picking on Roundup, but other insecticides and other herbicides, for example, if you use these products, then you're going to have higher yields. And while initially that appeared to be the case, it seems with good organic practices, and we'll talk about organic in a minute, but with good organic practices, the yields are getting close to the same, if not in some cases even greater. So even the benefit, the so-called benefit of these type of pesticide products to offer higher yields in growing may not be there if you have the right farming practices. Now, 50 years ago, we apparently knew how to farm, and we had smaller farms and a lot of smaller farms, but you go across the Midwest these days and you see millions of acres of one crop being planted, and these mega farms, if you will, farming these large acreages of farms because it's more efficient. It may be more efficient, but as we're seeing, it may not be the best for our health.
Is it fair to say that the deterioration of our food supply parallels the development, the growth of corporate agriculture? Is that a fair statement?
Well, I would think so. The plant food supply, it's also the animal food supply.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other McCullough articles I was reading earlier this morning had to do with the pig viruses in China, in the mega pig farms that they have. Well, this concentrated animal breeding and raising technique that we use for pigs, we use for cows, we use for pretty much chickens, as a habitat for all kinds of disease to not only breed and multiply and spread throughout the animals that are being raised that way, but to wind up in our food supply, and we wonder why we get sick so easily.
Of course, there were just stories last week. I think it was North Carolina. They had to destroy hundreds of thousands of chickens because of an avian disease that is now back with us again after a few years. So you concentrate all these animals in one place, you're begging for trouble.
Oh, very much so. And you have no way of stopping it because the animals are not naturally spread out. I mean, if you see free-range chickens, for example, yeah, they'll kind of cluster together, but they're not packed. You don't have two or three chickens in a square foot
you don't have a herd of chickens. No.
Yeah, they're spread out because they're looking for the insects and stuff, and they're all pecking away and doing their thing like they're supposed to do, and that's the way that nature intended. That's the way God intended these animals to live, and there's a reason for that, because they're less susceptible to disease if they're eating natural food available to them. For one thing, they're healthier. We already know that free range anything has higher levels, for example, of omega-3. We know that our food supply is way over the edge, out of balance on omega-3s. It's very, very heavily omega-6s, and if you free range the animals, whether you're talking about cows or whether you're talking about chickens or sheep or whatever it happens to be, you know, you wind up with an animal that is high in omega-3. Whereas if you concentrate these animals and put them in pens and raise them, you know, in a very concentrated way, lo and behold, their omega-3 levels drop. And so that, too, has a deleterious effect. So one, you know, all of this kind of points to the fact that, hey, you know, maybe the best way of doing things is going back to the small farms, going back to techniques where you do crop rotation, you don't over fertilize any one particular area, and you keep you have multiple crops going, you know, at one time. I can remember visiting my relatives up in Illinois, and they would have a field. Maybe they'd have a field of wheat. They'd have a field of oats. They'd have a field of corn. They'd have a field of, you know, beans, and they would do, common technique was crop rotation. Of course, in the organic farming, some of the organic farming techniques, you do. You might have a cover crop, for example. You're sowing maybe beans along with the corn, so the beans are putting nitrogen in the soil, and the corn is taking nitrogen out of the soil, and there's a synergistic type of effect going on there. So those type of farming techniques where you get a better product in the end, you have a more nutritious product, and more importantly, you have a safer product, I think are the techniques that we in general need to go back to.
You know, come to think of it, even the Bible has some advice for us there, doesn't it? I mean, you let the field rest every 7 years. I mean, there's a factor in itself that we look right over. We have guidance in the Scripture for how to do this right in some aspects.
Yeah, and you have to ask yourself, okay, why did God, you know, command the Israelites to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I think the creator of the universe understood the system.
He knew crop rotation.
He did.
He understood. He knew how to rotate crops. Mm. One of the big problems, and one of the big conditions that's led to this dominance of corn in most of the fields around here, and huge amount of corn grown in just and all the Midwest states, the bigger Midwest farmers, is price supports and the ethanol industry. And I wonder if there's a possibility for any of that to change in this administration. Have you heard
anything? Well, that's I haven't heard about anything along those lines, but, you know, that doesn't mean that they're not thinking about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that the influence, of government on everything that we do is, as you are quite aware, is massive. So what originally was intended, let's say, may perhaps for good, you know, winds up being taken to the extremes, and then we get an overproduction in one particular crop, and I was just reading another article that says, hey, you know, we've got so much energy reserves in this country, and it's not only here in Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all across the United States. Every state has an energy reserve. Yeah. And we've got more energy under our soil that would last us, even if we, you know, burn it up at a tremendous rate, last us for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So why do we need to be producing ethanol?
Right.
You know, what's all this?
Yeah, why are we turning some of our food source into energy? I mean, that's never made any sense to me, and it's not economic. It's a not it costs more to produce a gallon of ethanol than it does a gallon of gas.
It takes more energy to produce a gallon of ethanol than the ethanol itself provides. And it does happen, and you think of all the things that corn is in. I mean, it affects the price of corn. It's raised the price of corn. And that's had ramifications around the world. But corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup and corn starch and all the corn byproducts are in just about everything. You know, it seems like 90% of what you buy in the store has corn in some form as part of the mix here. And, Don, there's another factor, and I probably mentioned this to you before, but there was a TV show on, it was last year sometime, and it was about time travel. And it was about a man who went back to prevent John Kennedy from being assassinated. That was the crux of the plot. And there was an older man who ran a diner in the modern times who went back, and he had the time machine in his diner kind of thing. And he needed to send somebody younger. And before sending him back to the 60s, he had fears that he might not want to come back to the present time. And one of the things he warned him about, he says, the food will taste much better to you then. Don't be persuaded to stay for that reason. And taste is something that comes along with organic production. And you know, if enough time has gone by, we don't know what tomatoes are supposed to taste like anymore, for example. Now in this article that we're talking about over at Mercola.com, there's a dirty dozen and a clean 15, and there's a link to the article now in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com if you'd like to check this out. I'm going to read the list of conventionally grown fruits and vegetables that carry the greatest toxic load in terms of pesticides. And this is according to the Environmental Working Group that has provided this list of the worst offenders. Here is the dirty dozen. They say these are the most hazardous in terms of carrying pesticides. Peaches, apples. And apples, I've heard, because you can't wash it off. It's inside the fruit. You can't just wash off the outside and be safe. Sweet bell peppers, celery, tomatoes, cherries, strawberries, nectarines, grapes, spinach, and cucumbers. And also they have cherry tomatoes. There's the 12th one there. Now, as opposed to that, there's a clean 15. That includes onions, avocado, sweet corn, pineapple, mango, kiwi, asparagus, cauliflower, eggplant, frozen sweet peas, it says. I don't know why it distinguishes them as frozen. Honeydew melon, grapefruit, cabbage, papaya, and so goes the list. But there are studies that tell you which are the dangerous ones and which are the safer ones. When I say dangerous, I mean in relative terms. So there's some solid advice for you here over at this Mercola article. So you might want to follow that link and check it out. Yeah, Dave?
You know me. I'm a perpetual optimist. I'm looking for the silver lining in all the dark clouds. I wonder if there is a noticeable increase in the amount of organic foods available, and is there a noticeable increase in the not just the availability but the usage of organic foods among the population. I think there is here in this country, but I'm not sure about the rest of the world.
Well, I think in Europe that would indeed be the case because there's still a lot of small farms in Europe, and they do farm in a more, you know, traditional manner than they do here, here in the States. So, I think Europe for sure would be one of those areas, and if you go to Europe, I mean, when I was in when I was in France or Italy or some of those countries, I mean, even at the airport, you know, you're getting a lunch, let's say, at the airport before your flight leaves, and the you talk about the flavor, you know, the vegetables. I mean, they just had so much flavor to them. It was like, wow, this I don't mind eating, you know. And that was, you know, we normally would consider, you know, airport food not the most exciting, but you know, there was a stark contrast between, you know, what they had to offer and what we have to offer, even at some of our better restaurants sometimes. I mean, so
They have also outlawed GMO foods over large portions of Europe, which has been enough to drive some companies who make the stuff into the United States to do business. You know, Monsanto, for example, went through the courts trying to get into Europe, and Europe said, no, we're having none of it.
Sometimes they blocked the import of certain types of grains, for example, mm-hmm. because they've been treated with glyphosate or other pesticides.
You've been to Africa. I would guess over large parts of Africa and probably Asia too, organic is still the thing because they don't have the big corporations. They don't have the kind of landscape that facilitates millions of flat acres that you can run machinery over.
There's a project that we just started recently, and within the last maybe 3-4 months, and there's one of the government agencies, and I'm not sure if it's an individual parliament member or if it's an actual agency that's putting this on, but they're doing seminars on subsistence farming.
Now this is in Africa, right?
Right. Okay. It's in Africa, and we just raised money to send 12 of the people that work in and around our orphanage, our mission, to go to this seminar. And I'm not sure. I think the seminar's in May or April. Mm-hmm. But it's after the rainy season's over. So it's after the harvest and when the dry season starts. And they'll learn more, not subsistence farming, but more organic farming. And the farming to use less pesticides, less fertilizers on the plants, and I don't know any of the specifics about what they'll learn, but so there is some movement. I mean, and I don't know how many other seminars or training sessions there are like this, but it's something. It's a beginning.
But Don, this is such a huge change to go back to. Hands-on farming, smaller plots. I've heard it said that in this country, even living in suburbia, if all those nice lawns that we have were converted to fruit and vegetable gardens, that we could feed ourselves largely. Have you heard that?
I don't know if I've necessarily heard that, but that's the thing. God's system is one of multiplication. So you plant a seed, for example, and it produces 10, 20, 100 fold mm-hmm. the amount, from just that one seed. So it doesn't really, take that much space to grow an awful lot of food, for yourself. There was when I was just gotten out of doing my PhD and was doing a postdoc out in California, one of the things that was popular was postage stamp gardening. And so you'd have a little raised bed, and we had a raised bed in our little home that we had there. And the amount of vegetables that we could grow was just amazing, just by preparing the soil of a small area and then making sure that it has enough potassium, for example, and enough nutrients to support life. But we could grow pretty much anything, and it would really grow and take off. So it doesn't take much space to do this. It does take time, however. And in our society, where everything is rush, and we got fast foods, and we got people don't even have time barely pick up a hamburger at their fast food place, it does take a little time to grow a garden and to maintain it a little bit. But there are even techniques to help, along those lines. For example, the many people complain of weeding being a major problem. Well, it doesn't have to be, because all you need to do is put down some cardboard and plant your plants through the cardboard, and now the cardboard acts not only as a moisture barrier to keep the moisture into the soil, and as it slowly degrades, for example, uh, it it is benefiting the plants that you know are that you've planted, and you don't have to worry about the weeding, if you will, and the weeds are under control. So there's even methods that make you know, that we've learned to make life easier along those lines.
Well, we're talking about a basic lifestyle change, a whole different approach to counteract this, and it might take a generation or two, but I think it's starting. There is something called the slow food movement where homeowners associations or maybe your block in suburbia, you know, people get together and plan out a garden. And what if it's, you know, each home on the block has 10 square feet and grows a particular crop in combination with all the others on the block, and you put all that in and enjoy it in common. Even getting together and cooking it from scratch in common is getting, that's part of the slow food movement, and I think it deserves some attention. I've seen buildings, you can do this on the internet, look for buildings, skyscrapers, that are virtual standing gardens, where people are growing food in their urban environment on you know, many floors up, with hanging plants and pots and so forth. So maybe it's time. I hope this is getting enough attention. As David mentioned, I know up here we're seeing more and more organic foods and more space devoted to organic foods in the local supermarkets. And I think that's encouraging. Mm-hmm. And buying that whenever you can. Yeah, right now it's a tad bit more expensive, but it's getting more and more competitive every day. And if you channel your grocery budget into organic foods, you can really help promote this thing.
Well, that's right, but it's also much more important as we learn about the deleterious effects of the chemicals that we're treating, you know, standard farming, you know, techniques. It's much more important for a pregnant woman to be considering organic foods, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, so unfortunately, you know, if you get pregnant, then you've got to be concerned about the fetus that's growing, you know, within you. And so, yes, okay, you can't smoke, and no, you shouldn't be drinking, you know, a whole lot. And now, you know, we say, okay, eat organically. Mm-hmm. Make sure your foods are organic, so you're not poisoning the infant that is growing inside.
Mm-hmm. Interesting point. And again, the article we're talking about is over at Mercola.com. Dr. Mercola is a huge promoter of things organic and non-GMO. A lot of information on the website. And as long as you're searching websites, I would recommend a visit to creationmoments.com. Their website has a link on our page at Broken Road Radio. You just click on it, and you'll find there a wealth of information about the science that supports the biblical story of creation. And yes, there is science. It's perfectly valid and pretty persuasive, too. You might spend some time there and see what some of the books and DVDs and of course, you hear the radio program every day, twice a day, right here on Broken Road Radio Creation Moments. So, Dr. Don, Garden Valley, Texas, as always, we're grateful for the time you spend with us and the education, the edification that you bring to us. And we learned something about organic food today. Thanks so much. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week.
You folks too, and I hope you're not freezing up there.
It's two below at the moment here, Don. So.
Oh, now you ask.
Oh, yeah.
My organic garden is suffering at the moment here. But
organic is frozen to death.
This too shall pass. Don, take care. We'll see you.
See you, Don.
You too. Okay.